As Americans, we're blessed with an abundance of energy sources, and you know, to not use every one of them to the best of our ability and do it cleanly and safely would be crazy. But it's very clear that the Biden administration on day one after inauguration was to join the Paris Accord, shut down the Keystone Pipeline, and limit federal leasing for oil and gas. So, you know, unless we want the lights to go off, you know, we're going to need to replace that with something else.
Hey friends, welcome back. Thank you so very much for tuning in. It's Sean from SGTReport.tv and SGTReport.com here with a very important economic update. Guys, we're going to do a follow-up to that call I did with Amir Adnani not too long ago. Amir is over at Uranium Energy Corp. Well, guess what? They spun out a company called Uranium Royalty Corp, and I have on the line the president and CEO of that company, Scott Melby. How are you, sir?
I'm great, Sean. It's good to be with your viewers and listeners today.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. If you don't mind, let's start with gold and silver. I'll do a screen share here. Disorder will come. Scott, did you realize that gold is today as cheap in relation to the money supply as it was in 1970 at $35 an ounce, and as cheap as it was in 2000 when gold was priced at $290? And here we sit with the Fed printing, but all commodities are on the move. Zero Hedge has really been pumping the uranium story, which is why I wanted to get you on. Why uranium stocks are about to soar. We'll get back to that in a second. Let me get back to you here, Scott. First of all, gold and silver. In my view, it is absolutely ridiculous that silver's at $25 an ounce. I think that story I just showed there shares the true story. What's your view on where we're headed and all the central bank money printing?
Yeah, well, listen, I'm also a very big bull in gold and silver, and frankly, resources in general. I mean, you don't need to be a Wharton economist to understand what's happening with our economy and the rampant printing of money and all the things that, you know, we were told when we took economics 101 as kids, that you can't do this without trashing the value of your currency. So I'm not surprised that commodities are strong, and certainly coming out of a, you know, COVID year in 2020, people around the world get back to buying everything and factories start humming again, you're going to need a lot of commodities. And so, not surprisingly, a number of commodities like uranium are responding. So it's exciting times.
You know, as I explained to Amir, uranium is outside of my wheelhouse of the normal topics I talk about, but I am so concerned about inflation and eventually, quite likely, hyperinflation that I want to talk about all of these commodities, because I think what people miss about uranium and these other commodities is sometimes they move even faster. The prices explode higher even faster than gold. While gold is an incredible inflation hedge, commodities, energy commodities, oil, natural gas, and uranium are even more inversely correlated to dollar weakness. But beyond that, the uranium story is a supply and demand story that to me was shocking when I learned from Amir that we barely get the stuff here at all and we rely so much on Russia, and it's one of our core energy needs in this country is uranium.
Yeah, it's, there's so much interest on uranium equities and has been for several months now. And it's really a collision of two things. It's just the pure nuts and bolts of supply and demand, how much we're producing, how much we're consuming, drawdown of inventories. But it's actually become bigger than that, in that uranium as a clean, carbon-free, baseload, 24/7, resilient source of power, these attributes are now beginning to be more widely recognized and accepted by policymakers, by environmentalists, by the investment community and ESG investing and whatnot. So we're really seeing a lot of capital flowing into the space, and as we should. We're in a Biden administration now that is very much more towards green, clean energy. Republican administrations were always and all of the above energy strategy, of which nuclear fit along with coal, oil, gas, wind, solar. But in a Biden administration, it looks like we're going to self-impose some limits on ourselves in terms of what energy sources we use. And so if we're going to rely heavily on renewables, wind and solar at best operate 25 to 30% of the time. We better figure out where the other 75% of our energy is coming from. And if we want it to be carbon free, nuclear is already over half of our carbon free energy in the United States, and bigger than wind and solar combined. So again, it's a wonderful opportunity for nuclear, not just relying on the existing fleet of reactors we have in the US, but also now small modular and advanced reactors that folks like Bill Gates and others are investing in, because you know they've done the math, they've done the science, and they realize in a more electrified society with computerization of everything and electric vehicles, we're going to need more energy, not less. And if we want it clean, we have very few alternatives.
Yeah, and that's what Amir was telling me as well. And Zero Hedge is really pumping this story. So maybe you could comment on this. Why uranium stocks are about to soar? Over the past 3 months, they've been especially constructive, they say, on the uranium sector. Zero Hedge is very excited about the uranium story. So why don't you tell us about Uranium Royalty Corp? It was spun out from Uranium Energy Corp. Can you just explain the nature of the company for folks?
Yeah, so if your viewers are you know big into base and precious metals, they'll certainly know the story of companies like Franco-Nevada, Wheaton Precious Metals, Sandstorm, Royal Gold. These are all companies that specialize in royalties and streams. So Uranium Royalty Corp is basically built on that same business model, but for the uranium space. We're focused only on investing in uranium assets around the world. But the advantage of a royalty company is, one, you get diversification amongst a number of projects in a portfolio. In our case, we have 15 royalties and streams in our portfolio, including a couple of the world's two largest highest grade mines. But you're not investing in the mine, and you're not a joint venture partner that has cash calls and has to face cost overruns or standby costs or workforce costs. We're investing in a royalty, which is you cash up front to that developer to bring on a mine in exchange for royalty payments based on production, usually top line. So it's based on revenue, not profits, but it can be profits. Royalties are structured a number of different ways. So, you know, it's become a big go-to source of mine development finance in base and precious metals. And we believe that the uranium market, with the need to bring on so many new uranium mines around the world, will fit in nicely in this trend towards new production in the uranium space.
How dependent are we in the United States on nuclear for our energy needs?
Yeah, it may surprise folks, but the nuclear reactors in the United States supply a full 20% of our electricity, and as I mentioned, over 50% of the carbon-free energy. Globally, nuclear is about 10% of global electricity supply and a third of carbon-free energy. But in the U.S., even though we have enormous resources, perhaps over a billion pounds of known and likely resources in the Western United States, we've become really reliant on foreign imports, and perhaps most alarmingly, that these imports are coming from countries like Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, and Russia, countries that aren't always in our corner in terms of our best interests. So Amir and Uranium Energy Corp are one of the leading companies there in trying to bring on new mine production in Wyoming and Texas. Uranium Royalty Corp, we invest in royalties in U.S. Mining companies and development companies, but we're also, you know, part of that global market where we have assets in Canada, in Africa, and looking at new resources to invest in around the world.
Wyoming and Texas, are those the best jurisdictions to mine in, or just the best locations to find the stuff in the United States?
Well, I'm biased, but I believe both. You know, the states of Wyoming and Texas have a strong history in terms of resource development, whether it's coal, oil and gas, mineral resources. And that's really true in uranium, where while it still takes a long time to permit and license a new mine, there's generally very positive support from local officials, federal officials, and local communities and landowners. So, you know, we love operating there, but also, you know, you're endowed with minerals, you know, where you find them. And South Texas, for example, is probably one of the most prospective areas in the world for new discoveries in addition to what we know is already there. So it's a good story for the United States. I mean, we should be producing more uranium for our energy needs here and not rely on countries which, like I said, aren't necessarily in our best interest. So the U.S. government has recognized that as well. It was started in the Trump administration and is now continuing in a Biden administration is this strategic uranium reserve, which has been funded for FY 2021 and will be put in place here shortly by the Department of Energy. So again, it's I think something unique with uranium and nuclear power these days. It's one of the few things that Republicans and Democrats agree on. Our support is largely bipartisan. I just testified before the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee Thursday of last week. And I can tell you, having been in the industry now 36 years, I've never seen the degree of bipartisan support for nuclear and what it can provide in our clean energy future and the support for a robust and growing domestic fuel cycle for those reactors. So we really have a great opportunity. I think that's a big reason why you see the equities markets reacting to a lot of these developments, but kind of the perfect storm of positive factors are all coming together for uranium these days.
Well, it sparks a thought. I wonder if the smartest guys in the room have figured out that because Joe Biden, this administration, is so hostile to current forms of fossil fuel energy, they're hostile to the natural gas sector, the coal sector. We can see what he did to the XL pipeline. To me, it's just an outrage, but I think this is all part of the UN Agenda 2030 agenda to remove our ability to heat our homes with these traditional forms of power. So when investors think about getting involved in the energy sector, uranium seems like a no-brainer, for the reasons you've cited, because both sides of the aisle seem to be on board with nuclear, and therefore uranium is set to soar. I think that's why Zero Hedge keeps writing these articles, because they know what this UN Agenda 2030 future is. And it's going to be very, very dark, especially if we don't have nuclear.
Yeah, I share your views. I mean, as Americans, we're blessed with an abundance of energy sources, and you know, to not use every one of them to the best of our ability and do it cleanly and safely would be crazy. But it's very clear that the Biden administration on day one after inauguration was to join the Paris Accord, shut down the Keystone Pipeline, and limit federal leasing for oil and gas. So, you know, unless we want the lights to go off, you know, we're going to need to replace that with something else. And nuclear is fits the clean energy criteria. So I think it's, like I said, if we're in a Republican administration, we fit the narrative very well, and we had great support in the Trump administration. But we're, you know, we are still kind of feeling our way through the new administration. But Gina McCarthy, who is the White House's energy and climate advisor, spoke out very strongly in favor of nuclear energy just last week. So I think we've got a I feel sorry for our brother and sisters in the fossil fuels industries, but in terms of nuclear, we really have an opportunity here to show the country and the world what we can provide in our energy future. So it's exciting times, and it'll require a lot of uranium to fuel reactors, not only here, but you know, we've added 53 new large reactors around the world in the last 8 years. There's 53 more under construction. So we're back to pre-Fukushima levels of nuclear generation. That's just because that need, you know, countries like India, China, they need huge amounts of baseload power, and they've got to do it more cleanly than the way they are currently. So, you know, it is a global growth story, but here in the United States, we're really excited too. I think these small modular reactors, you're going to hear names like TerraPower, NuScale, X Energy. These are this next generation of small 50, 100, 200 megawatt reactors that can be built in factory, shipped on site, and they're very much more akin to the reactors we have in our aircraft carriers and submarines, which have operated safely and efficiently since the 1950s. So definitely that SMR, small modular reactor growth is also part of the narrative right now.
I'm so glad you mentioned the Paris Climate Accord, because in my view, what this guy has done is absolutely criminal. He's undone so many great things that President Trump put in place. President Trump allowed us to be energy independent in the United States, and it just seems like this administration wants to unwind everything that makes America safe and secure. My view, and I just need to express that, because as we move forward into this potentially dark future where they want to take away all our current forms of energy, the fossil fuel energy, I really need to address the safety concerns people have about nuclear. Now, obviously, Fukushima was just an absolute nightmare. I think it's still probably an ongoing nightmare. Your thoughts on safety here, because so many of these reactors are old and aging, and maybe some of them should be retired, but you know they're not going to retire these things. What's your view on safety?
Yeah, so obviously, utmost importance for any energy source. But, you know, Fukushima is interesting to look at now, 10 years after the tsunami and earthquake took the lives of tens of thousands of people in the earthquake and tsunami. Again, I think if we step back and we look at nuclear energy in terms of deaths or injuries all the way back to the 1950s, it's still one of the safest forms of energy that we have today. And a lot of the advances... you know, I think the Achilles heel of the Fukushima reactor was failing to prevent tsunami protection and you know, protecting their offsite power to the reactors in case there was such a natural disaster. That's something that in the United States, we really corrected a lot of those deficiencies after 9/11, when we identified, you know, new threats to not only nuclear reactors, but skyscrapers and other public installations. And so we hardened a lot of those facilities in a way that I think we'd advise the Japanese to do so, but we're slow to execute on their part. But in terms of, safety of energy forms, another thing that's mentioned is the waste. Well, we've kept every gram of waste ever produced in every nuclear power plant since the 1950s. It hasn't been pumped out of smokestack or pumped into a river. It's been kept on site. If you took all the waste since the advent of nuclear power in the United States, it would fit on one football field. So, I think we've been more responsible than a lot of industries. And certainly we hear a lot about air quality concerns in some of the major cities of Asia and India and China, and millions of premature deaths. Forget climate change or carbon, or just air pollution from coal-fired power plants. So, you know, this is a distinct improvement, maybe to the tune of millions of lives saved with nuclear energy.
So this sector has been in a huge bear market for a long time. That's been turning, obviously, recently. And I wonder if this story isn't a little bit like the Bitcoin story, to the degree that Bitcoin really began to rally hard when deep-pocketed billionaires got involved. Corporations like MicroStrategy got involved. Who else? Square, Jack Dorsey, who I don't care for at all since he banned me from Twitter. But do you think that uranium and uranium energy, uranium stocks are now once again getting the attention of Wall Street?
Yeah, definitely are. And I think a lot of the, you know, these small modular reactors, not only are they getting the kind of government support in the United States and Canada, the UK, around the world, obviously Russia and China are also competing in that space. But you're seeing private investment from the likes of Peter Thiel investing in next generation reactors. I think, again, it's just, they're intellectually honest enough, you know, they're environmentalists, like I think we all are, but they've done the math and science, and renewables only doesn't get us there. And if Elon Musk is right, and electric cars are adopted the way it appears they will be, either voluntarily, hopefully in the United States, or mandated in Europe, we're going to need to double our electricity consumption to power all these cars. So not only do we have to deal with our existing demand for electricity, but even greater. And I always laugh, state of California wants to go to all electric cars by 2030 or 2040 in that time frame, yet they can't deliver electricity reliably to homes and businesses in 2021. I think there's a bigger issue we've got to think through before they go down that path. But we're all for electric vehicles, and you know, if nuclear plants that run 24/7 can charge everybody's car in their garage at night and they go off to commute to work the next day, that's a great use for nuclear energy. And it also pairs well with intermittent renewables that, as we mentioned, only run when the wind is blowing or the sun is shining. So you got to have something backing it up. And you know, also predictable fuel costs. I mean, we love electricity from natural gas when gas is cheap, but when gas prices go up, like we saw in Texas recently, we end up with $18,000 power bills. So nuclear, uranium is such a small fraction of the generating cost of nuclear. You could have a tripling of, quadrupling of the uranium price, and it wouldn't really impact the rates. So there's a lot of advantages to nuclear in the mix, and I think we're finally beginning to see others agree and begin to adopt that vision.
Yeah, well, you mentioned uranium price. Let's talk about that, because you also mentioned electric car demand soaring. I saw an article, I think, from Zero Hedge earlier today. I think GM, Toyota, and one other, their sales are up 22% just this year in e-vehicles. So obviously that story is going to continue to unfold, and the demand will continue to go up, which to me begs the question, how are they going to continue to cap the price of silver below 30 when you can't build these batteries without silver? You can't build these automobiles. You can't do a lot without silver. So the same is true for uranium. Do you want to talk a little bit about the uranium price? Where is this thing going if there's all this new demand and new reactors being built?
Sure. Well, you've touched on something is just critical minerals and minerals needed. I don't care if it's the green energy economy or the energy economy that we just had with the Trump administration. We need to mine things like copper, nickel, cobalt, silver, uranium to power these economies going forward. And I think that's beginning to be realized more greatly. I mean, I don't know if you're a copper bull or not, but the amount of copper in an electric vehicle is astounding. And so, you know, we've got a kind of view that as investors, we love it. We see a narrative that we can invest in, but as policymakers, I think they're going to have to get their head around not only just supporting, in our case, clean air energy from nuclear, but also be supportive of uranium mining. But in answer to your question on uranium price, we're now finally moving above $30 a pound in the spot price. We've seen recent, in the last 10 years, we've seen prices as high as $70 to $130 a pound in the uranium market. We've also seen prices fall as low as $17 a pound. So that was the November 2016 low. So ever since that time, we've finally seen a cutback of global production to a point where we're 40 to 60 million pounds a year below global consumption over the last 4 years. And that's got to have an impact on a drawdown of inventories and secondary supplies that are finite to the market, but they've obviously been sufficient to keep the price suppressed under $30 for some time. Why is $30 significant? The world's best mines in the United States or Canada or elsewhere, they need $40 to $50 a pound to produce profitably, and new mines probably $50, $60 and higher. So we're in a market which demand is booming and is back to pre-Fukushima levels. We see production cut back dramatically below consumption. So as commodity and resource investors, we like this setup because we're going to need a lot of new mine production, but the price is going to have to rise quite a bit to stimulate that new production. So really nice setup as we sit today in 2021.
All right. Well, you know, like I said at the beginning of the call, or at least I think I inferred this, I'm more familiar with Uranium Energy Corp than I am with Uranium Royalty Corp. So can you just talk, I know you probably addressed this at the beginning, but for those who are listening, again, just briefly explain to us the business model and tell us about the key shareholders, will you?
Yeah. So URC was launched on the Toronto Stock Exchange in December of 2019. It was one of the bigger, if not the biggest, mining IPOs that year. But we've more than doubled, close to tripled our IPO value over that time. So we're seeing a lot of interest. We have some major resource investors like Marin Katusa, Rick Rule, Darren Millmeister out of Extract Capital, Warren Gilman out of Hong Kong, who manages a lot of Li Ka-Sheng's money. They love the royalty model in mining in general. and they're very bullish on uranium as a commodity. So we're very excited to be up and running. For U.S. shareholders, we're traded over the counter at URCCF, but we're very excited in the coming weeks to be advancing our listing on either the New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ. We're in that process of listing down in the U.S. where so much investment we've seen in Uranium Energy Corp. And so we want to make it easier for U.S. investors to be able to invest in Uranium Royalty Corp.
That's actually a huge scoop. That's a big story. You think you might be listed on one of the major exchanges like NASDAQ in the near future?
We're in the application process right now, and obviously there's different criteria to being listed on each of those two exchanges. But you know, confident we'll be listed in the U.S. over that next 30 days or so. But still to be determined whether it's NASDAQ or NYSE.
Okay, as we wrap this up, can you speak about your 2021-2022 near future goals?
Sure. Well, URC started the year with a big development in that we acquired royalties on two of the world's largest uranium mines out of Saskatchewan, Canada, called Cigar Lake and MacArthur River. These are ore grades 100 times the world average. So to have those in the portfolio is a really big achievement. Certainly has caught the attention of the investment community. So we really want to build on that. We recently announced we'd elected an option we have under a foundational shareholding in Yellowcake PLC, which is a company out of London that buys uranium and warehouses it on behalf of investors. We're able to access their long-term billion-dollar contract with the world's largest producer, Kazatomprom, in Kazakhstan, to buy uranium under those terms, which we did, and we announced just last week to acquire 350,000 pounds of uranium at what we think is near the cycle lows. So just adding, you know, a valuable asset onto the balance sheet. But we can't rest on our laurels. We're already looking to see where we can join into counterparty royalty and streaming arrangements, whether they be in Australia, Africa, the U.S., or Canada. But the pipeline is quite big. A lot of mine development is going to be required in the next 5 years based on all the demand things that we've just talked about. So we'll be part of that. It could be $2 billion worth of investment in uranium mines over the coming years, and we want to capture our share of it in the royalty and streaming space and obviously give that exposure to investors in URC.
Great. Well, one final question. So I got an email a while ago from a listener. His name is Brian. And he says, have you heard about molten salt reactors? And he said you should do a video about thorium molten salt reactors. It seems pretty much every time I bring up nuclear, people email me and say thorium is the answer. But I think thorium utilizes uranium as well, does it not? So your thoughts on molten salt reactors and thorium?
Well, thorium is, in a world where we're going to need all of our energy resources going forward, you know, I think research into the thorium fuel cycle is warranted. A country that's put the most focus on thorium in terms of a fuel cycle as an alternative to uranium would be India, which began back in the 70s when they were under international sanctions for their nuclear weapons aspirations at that time, and they were cut off from the Western world in terms of uranium imports. So they really went down the path of developing the thorium fuel cycle. But, you know, decades later, they're still probably in a three-stage process. They've probably got moved from, you know, first stage and just embarking on the second stage. So it's not a quick fix. There are some advantages to thorium fuel cycle. There's some disadvantage. But, you know, Brian's reference to the molten salt reactor, these are one of these advanced reactor designs that are extremely exciting. I mean, molten salt reactors not only can generate electricity, but they can also store heat almost as in the form of a battery, a grid-scale battery, which is yet to be developed. If they can bridge that gap with a molten salt reactor, hey, that's a great development. But you know, some of the designs I'm familiar with are still based on uranium fuel cycles. So again, we should be open to all sorts of advanced reactor types going forward.
All right, good. Glad I asked that question. Okay, and to be clear, currently Uranium Royalty Corp trades in the States as URCCF, correct?
That's correct.
All right. Well, please do keep me posted if you guys end up getting listed on one of the major exchanges.
Yeah, we definitely will. Again, we have a lot of shareholder support in Uranium Energy Corp in the U.S., and we just want to make it as easy as possible to trade in URC in the same fashion. So that'll be good news.
All right, very good. Guys, our guest has been Scott Melby. He's the president and CEO of Uranium Royalty Corp. Scott, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Sean. Take care.
You too. Friends, thank you so much for tuning in. We really do appreciate you. And for real news 24/7, please visit us directly at sgtreport.com, the antidote to corporate propaganda. Bye-bye.